Rich, you're going to talk later about chemotherapy in older people. What about BEV in older people without cardiovascular disease, but just the person in, for example, in their 80s?
Well, I don't think we have a lot of data to suggest that it's tolerated worse in older people unless they have a history of an arterial thrombotic event and are over the age of 65. So I routinely use it in my practice without consideration for age, but I do consider the arterial thrombotic history.
Dan?
Two things intersecting. One is the databases on people in real life getting bevacizumab, and Axel might comment on this, and the data to date in quite a number of thousands of patients show that the toxicity is not much higher than clinical trials. The other data set is the data which shows about 80% of people get Bev in first line in the United States. You don't want it at 100%. I think people are doing a good job of giving people Bev in the right setting. That's why the data from the real life setting is no different, at least at this point, from the controlled trials.
Howard?
I just wanted to emphasize a point that Alan made, is that in the toxicity analysis, the risk for 65 was greater and the risk for recent arterial event was greater, and the risk of both of them was the greatest, but they all had at least the same benefit in terms of survival. So I think in part of the informed consent discussion, when I speak to a patient, I tell them, your risk of having another arterial event may be up to 10%, but this is also likely to prolong your life by 33%.
So an interesting question would be, if we believe that the benefit from bevacizumab is adding 4.5 months to survival, does that change our willingness to take the risk?
Neil?
I agree with Rich that this is one of the key points to consider with an individual patient, is what is the risk in that individual patient, and also what is the potential gain in that individual patient. And for me, the scenario that sometimes plays out is in a patient for whom cure is not possible, where we're talking about palliation, prolongation of survival, I may not, and that patient may not, be willing to take on the added risk of bevacizumab if they're in a high-risk group for having a thrombotic complication as frontline therapy. But if we're then talking about second-line therapy or third-line therapy, where we know that bevacizumab can also improve survival after failure of frontline therapy if it hasn't been used before, because of ECOG 3200, the trade-off may be very different. It may be their last chance to get bevacizumab if it's ever going to be an option. And so the trade-off might be different in that setting. They might be more willing to take the chance as they get closer to their death.
Rich, what about the issue of the patient where you're going for cure? Does that make you bend the rules a little bit more?
I think so. In my practice, I'm willing to take more risks if there's more potential for a reward.
I would like to comment that for an elderly patient, which this frequently might be, if you look at the data for combining bevacizumab with 5-FU, it seems like that is, in general, a better regimen than adding a second chemotherapy drug. So I include that in my consideration, that if the choice is giving 5-FU leucovorin with bevacizumab in an increased risk of an ATE versus giving them, you know, FOLFIRI or FOLFOX, that is also going to be a toxicity question for day in and day out toxicity versus the low risk of one more serious complication.
Alan?